was called Cold. That was the name that he was called by.
What's going on up there could be the most important event in history.
Now I am become Death, the destroyer of worlds.
I said, I hope this is as close to hell as I'll ever get.
Hello and welcome to the Tales from the Dark podcast. I'm your host, Bob, here with my co-host, Brittany.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Brittany, how's it going today?
It's going pretty good. How are you?
Oh, it's going well. We are on episode 11 of our listener stories. Can you believe we've done 11 episodes of these?
No, it doesn't feel like it.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about that when I was compiling these stories for listener stories 10. And I was like, man, it's kind of fucking crazy that I remember us pitching this idea to one another to do a listener story series. Because, you know, a lot of other podcasts do these, and some podcasts, this is all they do. They just read
listener submissions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was like, do we really want to go this route? And then what was interesting was the Facebook group that really showed me like, oh, people have stories to tell.
Because what I was going to say, because we saw them in the comments, we saw them in the posts, like the pending posts and things like that. People wanted to tell us their stories.
Yeah. Or we would cover a certain topic and they'd be like, hey, this exact thing happened to me. I saw these lights or what have you.
Yeah. It was definitely a natural progression, it felt like.
No, absolutely. So I'm going to go ahead and get us started here. This one comes from Anonymous, and it's just titled Stories from My Own House. I'd like to go through these as chronologically as I can, because there are a lot of them. Almost all of my encounters happened after I moved into the house that I still live in now. Or maybe that's when I just started paying attention. I want to put a pin in this real fast, because I was having this thought a while ago when it came to paranormal hauntings and hauntings of homes. My question is, because you hear these stories all the time that I moved into this house and then this started happening. Well, when you're moving, you're in this transitional period, this liminal space. And I've never met a single person who's like, you know what? I fucking love moving.
No, it's like one of the worst experiences you can go through, honestly, a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, and what made me think about this was when you moved up from North Carolina to Ohio, you were like, the air quality is different. The atmosphere feels weird. I have sinuses I've never had before.
Oh, God. I still struggle with that. Ohio weather is the fucking worst for this.
Oh, yeah. It's the pinnacle of like weird, especially if you move from a mountainous area that has great water quality and air quality.
Yeah.
But my point is, did you always have those issues slightly? And they were exacerbated when you came to Ohio. And it kind of makes you wonder the same thing about the paranormal. Was there always weird things happening around you, but because of the move, maybe the extra stress from moving, did that bring it to the forefront of your mind and then make it either A, worse, or B, has it always been that bad and you just now are able to say, okay, this is a problem?
Well, not only that, but as you're moving into unfamiliar surroundings. So you move from someplace you're very comfortable, very familiar with, you feel safe, and to somewhere that you don't know, and you don't know what the normal noises are, the normal sounds are. You don't have a schedule yet for how you interact with your house or the people around it. So you're definitely going to be more on edge when you move to somewhere new than when you came from before.
Well, that's something that you pointed out in Phantom Farm, that you've lived in old homes. You know what it sounds like when they're setting. This wasn't an old home. And there were a few reviews that referenced that, like, it was really important to note that the investigators weren't trying to say, we know what this building sounds like and what it should sound like. So we know that this is out of the ordinary because of our expertise in this. And I think that was something that was, it was kind of like an unintentional highlight of your experience or lack thereof in the paranormal when it comes to actual sit-down investigations.
Yeah.
All right, so continuing on here. Regardless, I'm almost certain that it's all connected somehow. Even though I've pretty much seen everything there is when it comes to the paranormal stuff, there have been full-bodied apparitions, cryptids, UFOs, unexplained sounds, and even something that can mimic other animals and people. Austin, Mrs. Austin.
Yeah, this has to be Austin.
I know that makes me sound insane, but I swear it's all true. You don't sound insane. The first story I want to go into happened only a few months after I moved here. My house is in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by woods and farmland on all sides. I was out in the forest walking down one of the trails that I'd made through the underbrush, and I reached a clearing. Despite only having lived here for a short while, I'd already pretty much memorized the layout of the woods, especially the parts near my trails, so I sat there for a while. There were a few dead trees around the edges, and it was already a windy day. There was a sudden knocking sound from the distance, like something beating a hollow tree or a drum with a big stick. It slowly got louder, but I didn't move. I was too curious about what could be making that sound, but I also knew better than to go investigate on my own, very smart. As it got closer, I started hearing it from other directions until it was surrounding me. Now, I was only staying still because of fear. It sounded like they were right on top of me, but I didn't see anything that could make the sound. It was a pretty large clearing, and the woods weren't too dense, so I'd know if it was people. I finally managed to get up and run, and not only 10 seconds afterwards, a big gust of wind comes and pulls down a massive rotten branch that fell right onto where I was sitting. That's fucking terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To this day, I think it was the spirits trying to protect me or warn me, because the only other thing I can think of to explain it was they wanted me to keep me there until the branch fell and killed me. Okay, I got to break this down for a second, because that's two very, very different trains of thought there.
Yeah, two very different points of view.
So I've heard of, you know, the stories of the forest protecting people, but I want to take it a step further with the drums.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a guy on YouTube, and I unfortunately cannot remember his name for the life of me, but he just did a video yesterday or the day before about fairy drum circles. Have you ever heard of a fairy drum circle?
I have, but I'm interested to see what you have to say.
So I only watched about 10 minutes of this like 45-minute story, but he explains that in the Scottish Highlands, there was this forest that people would walk through that conjoined these two villages, and it was like a common trade route. And it was short enough that you could walk without needing a horse or a carriage. Like if you just had a few boxes or something that you were going to trade villages, you could just take this one shortcut and be there.
Yeah.
Well, the story goes in the Scottish Highlands that this guy was walking and he had a crate of cheese that he was, I don't know if he was taking it to or from, I didn't catch that part. And he heard what he thought was a small drum. And he described it like what he heard in when he was somewhere in England or something, like a castle. He had heard this drum before. And it got louder and louder till it surrounded him, and it forced him off the path into a fairy ring.
And for those who aren't familiar,
a fairy ring is I don't know if it has to be a specific type of flower, but it's typically just flowers in a circle.
Or mushrooms.
So he gets pushed off into this fairy ring, and it's banging and banging and banging, going crazy. And all of a sudden, he drops the crate of cheese and it breaks. Well, that kind of broke his concentration, and he goes to break out of the fairy circle. As soon as he left, lightning struck the center of the circle and like blackened the cheese and destroyed the box.
Whoa.
So his thought was that he was being lured there by the fae folk to kill him. And he goes on in the story to explain how he had heard the fae legends of the area and would go out in the forest drunk and like challenge them to duels and to fight him and stuff.
Well, no shit, they were going to try to kill him.
So it makes me wonder, was this a fairy type of situation where you were either being lured to or drawn away from the location that the wood fell?
Very interesting.
The next story is shorter and has more to do with cryptids. I was out in front of my garage, which is a separate building from my house. Looking back now, I don't really remember why I was out there. The best explanation, I think is what it's supposed to say, I have is that I got a sudden urge to go outside. I was looking around the tree line, which is a decent distance from my garage. Here I should explain what my property looks like a bit more. It's a smallish two-floor house with only a few rooms, a garage, and a driveway. The driveway continues up a long way until it reaches my closest neighbor, who owns a horse ranch. That ranch extends down to the bottom of the driveway. On the left, if you looked up at it from my road. To the right is my property, which is mostly woods, but on the front and back sides of my house is a large, mostly empty yard. Back to the actual story. I was in front of my garage when my eyes caught on a spot in the trees. I can't say why, just that I felt drawn to it. I walked down, and as I reached the trees, I knelt in the tall grass at the edge so I'd be hidden in case there was an animal, since I didn't want to disturb whatever might have been there that caught my subconscious. I scanned the woods, and behind a large tuft of grass and shrubbery, I saw a grayish humanoid figure crouched on all fours. That just fucking threw me. A gray
yeah, that is
humanoid.
Not what I was expecting him to see.
It didn't look like it had any distinct facial features, and it almost looked blurry. It seemed to face me, and it fucked back behind the bushes, at which point I ran back up to my house. I don't have many neighbors, and I didn't think it was human, but I wasn't taking any chances. I haven't seen anything like it since, but I know it's common for a paranormal entity to change how it manifests. I should also say that there is a relatively large stream that goes through my woods near the road. Since you guys talk about how common it is for these encounters to happen near water, so I thought you might find it important. I'm going to end this message here so it doesn't get too long, but I have a lot more stories that I want to share, so I'll most likely send more.
Wow.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Well, there's one thing that you missed in his story. He doesn't want to say that it was an alien, or they didn't want to say it was an alien, but they can't be sure. So that's why they said a paranormal entity can change how it manifests.
Yep, I completely missed that part there. So
I want to say this reminds me very much so of, do you remember that Wendigo story we got of that old farmhouse with the woods on the edge?
Yep.
The whole scenery of how they described their house and their woods really reminded me of that story.
Yeah, I would love to know, not where you live, like I don't need to know this city necessarily, but what state are you in? Because I know what state that story took place in. So I'm interested, and I want to bring this up, and this is going to be a tough kind of conversation to have. So are you familiar with the Rake, the creature, the Rake?
Yes.
So it's making a comeback as of late, and I have to kind of be that guy, again, that puts the damper on everything. I was obsessed with the Rake story because when I found out about the Rake, it was through Markiplier. There was this game called The Rake, and it was the definition of like an indie, kind of a shitty title, but it was still really fun. And I kind of found the backstory. It was a creepypasta that originated on 4chan, took over to Reddit, and then it kind of took on a life of its own.
Yeah.
Well, there's this trail cam footage that's going around that everyone says has never been debunked, and it's of the Rake. It's actually from a video game that was very, very popular on the PS2 days, PS2, PS3 days. That's what the trail cam footage is from. But this almost sounds like that Rake that I've heard about, this gray humanoid feature, devoid of any facial features, kind of almost grayed out or looking like it's glitching in and out of reality. So you can't really, you know, the blurry aspect. That's what this reminds me of more than anything.
Or the Dover Demon, but the Dover Demon had eyes.
Yeah. So, but what I find interesting is there's such a large group out there who believes in the Rake's existence because the creepypasta took off the way that it did. And
not a lot of people know the origin story of it.
Yes. So people really believe that this Rake-like creature exists. How do we know that we're not dealing with a tulpa?
You could be. Now I'm traumatized by tulpas because of something you showed me, which we'll talk about later.
Yep, we have a forbidden ep coming up regarding tulpas, and it's
going to be a wild one.
It's something. But it does make me wonder if there's enough of a conjoined belief, especially fear. We know how powerful fear really is. Could that create a Rake-type creature that's now running loose in the fucking country
boonies.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the boonies. It could.
Yeah, because the only other thing this really reminds me of is something extraterrestrial. I've heard of a few encounters with a similar creature to this, but they're very aggressive. They make contact with you and they make sure that you're aware that they don't want you to know where they're going and that they're in that area to begin with. So I don't know. This one has me at a bit of a loss. I wasn't expecting the humanoid aspect of it.
And I was expecting like a Bigfoot or like a big cat or something that looked more like natural in woods.
It's so tough because the humanoid feature set, it really takes it away from, like you just said, a Bigfoot. Like a Bigfoot's like a bipedal type creature, but you don't hear it described as a humanoid type creature.
No, you have it described as like an ape because it's hairy.
I don't know. All right, I'm going to let you go on to the next story here.
So the next story is basically a second parter to the first entry.
Okay, so from the same guy.
Same guy.
Same person.
Person, yeah. Yeah. So I've decided to send another email detailing more of my encounters for clarification in case I need to say it. I'm the same person that sent the story of the gray humanoid in the woods and the drumming that either protected me from the tree branch falling or tried to kill me with it.
There's no in between. It's one or the other.
The first story is about from a year ago when I was about to leave the house late at night. As I was walking, I got a strange kind of intuition to stop and stay completely still, like a sixth sense telling me I was in some kind of danger. or that some kind of danger was nearby.
Have you ever had that happen when you were living in a more rural area? Because like right now we live kind of, I don't, it's not a subdivision, but we live in a very, there's a bunch of houses nearby.
Commercial, yeah.
Yeah. Did
commercial,
you ever have any that happen where you're in these, like a max patch type area and something just said, oh shit.
I've had it to where like I can't get out of the car. I mean, we've had that with some of the times we've been in Kentucky. I've, or run back to the car, but yeah. Never to stay still. Like I've never had to like stay completely still because I thought something was watching me or that if I moved any further, something bad would happen to me.
I got you. Yeah. Cause I've often wondered, is it exacerbated when you're by yourself?
Oh yeah.
You would imagine it would be cause you know, you don't have the safety in numbers type of thought, but at the same time, I think when you're with other people, you have a false sense of security. So I feel like maybe it would be even, it would present itself in an even stronger because it knows you have to pay attention.
Well, as a species, we are a roaming tribal species. We used to go around in groups and roam around the continental.
Yeah.
Like U.S., but all over.
Yeah, a migratory species.
Yeah, we were a migratory species. So we stuck together in numbers because you could take down predators that way easier if you were in greater numbers.
Yeah.
So it comes from an ancestral line to want to stay grouped and stay together. So I don't think it's necessarily a uncalled for sense of safety. I think it comes from, you know, evolution and from what we used to be. But I also think that we have a lot of things ingrained in our brains and in our DNA to be on a heightened alert when you're by yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, feeling like someone's watching you, like you have eyes in the back of your head kind of thing, your hair standing up on its end when you get like afraid. Like, I feel like all these are responses to help keep you away from danger.
Now, last question before you continue, do you think that these feelings are more common or maybe stronger in more rural areas versus a more condensed cityscape?
It depends on what you're used to. Because a person from the boonies who maybe grew up in a holler their whole life knows every sound, knows every track, knows what to see, what to hear when they're going through the woods or going through their area. And if you put them in the middle of New York City where you got pickpocketers, you got thieves, you got murderers, you know, you got people who want to beat you down, they're going to be more on edge than if they were in the woods. But you put a city dweller in the holler, they're going to be freaking out too.
Well, see, I love that you say that because I did one thing one time and it was a complete unconscious body effort and I've never done it since. One of the first times I came to spend time with you in North Carolina, we went to your friend James's house who lived kind of like up a hill. I don't want to say up a mountain, but up a pretty steep hill.
It was on
hill.
The side of a mountain, yeah.
And as I was walking in to his house, something told me to look down and I saw a fucking snake. And I grabbed the snake and threw it off into the woods. Do you remember me doing this?
Oh my God, I remember you doing that.
I hate snakes. I'm not a type to pick up snakes and just, you
know, hold them and pet them. He will not touch snakes at all.
Yeah, but something in my brain was like, look down, snake, grab snake and throw it because it's a predator. That's how my, and I haven't thought about that until right this second of how weird that really was for me to do.
Well, James had he lived in like this wood A-frame cabin thing. And he had so many bugs and snakes and animals outside that house. I could never live where he lived.
Yeah.
I hated that house. But yeah, no, I can't believe you did that because you really do have a fear of snakes.
Well, it's not that I'm afraid of snakes. It's that I grew up fishing and stuff and I grew up hearing so many stories and people are like, oh, fishing and snakes. No, out by Indian Lake where I used to do most of my fishing when I was a kid, I heard so many stories of someone reaching down to you know, reach in the water to grab their bass or something and a fucking snake
grabs a hold of them,
hits their wrist. And that was my biggest fear because I heard of several guys getting rushed to the hospital because a snake, non-venomous, but still a snake bit them in the wrist.
Punctured their arteries. Yeah,
and punctured a vein. And that was always an unconscious fear that I developed as a kid of, if a snake bites me on the wrist and I'm out in the middle of fucking nowhere, I'm probably going to die.
Well, see, my thing was I had rattlers and things around where I grew up in the woods. So, and we had black snakes also that I hated and were venomous. We had a lot of different varieties of venomous snakes around where I grew up. So yeah. I also don't really like snakes, but I've danced with snakes before. So
yeah, that's a whole other conversation about you being mentally unhinged as a teenager.
Apparently. As I stood silently, I noticed the woods had gone quiet as well. where the as birds and insects would usually be making noise even at that time of night. I heard a zipping sound from my driveway, like someone taking a zipper of a coat and pulling it down, up and down repeatedly.
That would be the most terrifying way a serial killer would, like, announce his presence. Oh, the zipper killer.
Oh, my God. No, no, I don't like that. The zipping noise continued for a few seconds. Then it was joined by heavy footsteps in the gravel, slowly making their way towards me. I was still in the light of my porch while everything else was almost pitch black. The footsteps started slow and then gradually seemed to get more confident and developed into a run. I quickly got back inside since I was only a few feet outside my house so far and locked all the doors. Nothing else happened that night, but the doorbell camera the next day, I could see a tall shadow pacing back and forth just at the edge of the light. Ooh.
Yeah, no thank you.
Okay, but do you think that's paranormal or do you think that's human?
This sounds human to me.
Yeah. This sounds like that, Welcome to the Game?
The Breather.
The Breather.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is I've heard a few of these stories where people are casing homes and they will figure out what kind of ring doorbell you have. And then they will bring out various ways to measure how far away can your ring doorbell see. And that's where they'll like set up to rob your house. Because that's the biggest problem is once I can tell like, oh, that's a Ring V3, I can then Google
how far they can see at night.
Yes. And it wouldn't be that hard to figure this out. I mean,
it would take some math for sure. But yeah.
Yeah. This to me sounds more human though than paranormal up to this point.
Yeah, no, that definitely does. Okay. So another longer story is from when I was spending the night at a friend's house. I believe this incident is what caused the worst parts of everything that came after it. This specific friend is pretty well off with a large house and small movie theater in his basement. When I say movie theater, it was really just a bunch of reclining chairs and a projector. But still, it was fancier than anything in my house.
That means you made it.
Yeah, yeah. He had told me a few stories of paranormal encounters in that room, such as knocking on the walls, electrical malfunctions, and shadow people. We decided to conduct a small investigation, which started with us mostly joking around and not doing much.
That's most paranormal investigations, just so you know.
Yep. I had my phone out to record it, but the phone would almost always stop recording around the 10-second mark, and the flash would start flickering. This happened on every phone we tried, so we eventually gave up recording it. After that, we lost interest for a while, since nothing other than that happened. We tried watching a movie in that room, but whatever was in there was apparently not done with us. The projector kept turning off and on its own, and whenever it did, we could see a silhouette of a child-sized person against a screen.
Okay, so that's when you just leave.
You punt the kid.
Yeah.
We were all moving around, and it wasn't, so we were sure it wasn't us. There was also nothing in the room that could make that shape. We got freaked out by this. Obviously, I would too.
Understandably so, yeah.
So we left the room until later that night. Around midnight, we went back into that room and introduced ourselves. We said we don't want to harm you, or we said we didn't want to harm it, and that it could communicate with us through tapping on the walls. Once for yes, twice for no.
Here's my question, and this is me channeling my inner Zach Baggins. I wonder what would have happened if you went in there and said, I'm here to fuck you up. You take off your belt and you snap it a few times. Like if you had a dad like mine, you know that sound of leather hitting leather.
Oh God. Whoosh. Yeah.
What would happen? I'm going to beat your ass bloody if you don't get the fuck out of my movie. I'm watching Die Hard, motherfucker. I don't have time for this.
Because
I know you're supposed to be respectful. I get it. But I go back to my conversation about demons that I get shit for all the time.
If they were an asshole in real life.
They're an asshole in death. So like, how do you deal with an asshole? You're not like, oh, I'm not here to harm you. No, I'm going to fuck you up. That's what I'm about to do.
Keep that same energy.
Yeah.
Everyone else in the house was either asleep upstairs or in that room, away from the walls, so it wasn't any of us or anyone else. We asked it a few questions, which it replied to with light taps or knocks. Once, it scratched loudly on the walls when we asked its name. We asked if it was a human spirit, which it said no. We asked if it was a malevolent spirit, to which it also said no. Then we asked if it wanted to hurt us, to which it knocked three times.
That's when you take your shirt off, you flex that, and you say, you want some?
You want? So I took that as a challenge.
You're looking at the Intercontinental Champion of the fucking U.S. right now, sir.
After a bit of confusion, someone asked if that meant maybe, and it said yes. After that, we decided we had enough. We said goodbye, told it we'd be leaving, and that it could not follow us. As soon as we left the room, everyone mentioned feeling a sense of dread being removed that they hadn't noticed while they were in that room. It felt like a literal weight being taken off my chest, as though it was easier to breathe and my heartbeat outside of that room. And I understand that feeling. I felt that way quite a few times.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
With that in mind, I wanted to confront it one more time. Okay. You got to cut your losses. You got to figure out when to cut your losses here.
You did fine. You've established it's there.
You established your dominance. Yeah. Like, cut your losses, man. I wanted to confront it one more time. I went back into the room with one other person, lights turned off, and told it that it was not welcome and that it needed to leave. I've always felt a connection with spirits and demons, according to my mother. It seems to run in the family. This one, however, did not want to listen. I saw shapes begin to develop in the pitch black of the room. In each of the corners, I saw tall, hunched figures with their backs pressed against the wall. They had long, branching arms that I couldn't quite see the ends of, lining the corners between the wall and the ceiling, but also branching out across each surface it touched.
Okay. I don't like this at all, because I have a mental image of what this would have looked like.
I feel like you went into the room naked, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like you weren't, in my opinion, it doesn't feel like you were necessarily mentally prepared to follow through with what your intention was. Like if your intention was banishing, then I feel like you weren't necessarily fully prepared to do so.
Yeah, well, because we've been taught, especially magicians, that banishing, you kind of go into it with the expectation of I have all the authority and nothing's going to fight back.
But you don't always.
Exactly. You don't always. And some things don't want to go. They don't want to be banished. They want to stick around wherever they are. So at the same time, that's where you have to kind of channel that inner aggression that you don't have a choice. This is not your decision. I'm making this for you.
But also, the other thing is, like, this isn't their home. This is their friend's home.
That's fair.
So, like, for us, if we wanted to banish something out of our house, we have established dominance and a domain over our residence, over our home, over our rooms, and everything about this house that we live in. You don't have the same domain over a friend's home
or a location that you're visiting. Yeah.
So you kind of go at it, in my opinion, just from what I've seen and done, you would go at it in a different way.
Well, you'll see that with Austin. And if you watch Phantom Farm, where he didn't say we're going to kick whatever out is bad here. He said we were discussing whatever was fucking with us on the women's corridor. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, if you can point us in the direction of the bad people, maybe we can help.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like we're establishing a trust, but it also wasn't
an unrealistic expectation.
Yes, we're here to do, you know, this specific task and we're going to do it by fucking hell or high water. Like we're not Sam and Dean Winchester here.
Yeah.
I had to throw that out there.
Yeah. As this happened, the words "a gift" jumped in front of my mind, almost like I heard it from them directly inside my head. It told me to try again in a low tone that sounded almost like a challenge. Instead, I tried to go turn on a light. As I walked towards it, one of the figures seemed to shift the world around it so that I came to be in front of the door without moving at all.
I don't like this.
I know it sounds like I'm just getting in my own head, but as this happened, the other person in the room suddenly panicked, saying the light from behind the door had just disappeared. Where there used to be light sweeping from the other side, there was now just a branching creature blocking the way. I reached for the light switch and flicked it as soon as I found it on the wall, at which point all the creatures vanished. I heard the word "fine" play in my head, like the others had. Not like I thought them, like someone had said them directly inside my mind.
Okay, a little bit of telepathy here.
The other people outside the room all insisted that they hadn't messed with the lights out there, nor seen them flicker. and seemed genuinely concerned as I thought they had. Since then, I've been able to see the creatures in dark rooms and hallways in usually either humans or the branching figures. The only thing I can think whenever I see one near is that I never told them not to follow me the second time I went in. Now I think it's too late. Again, I know I sound like a crazy person, but these stories have other witnesses and have shown no symptoms of any kind of hallucinations or mental illness that would cause them, nor have I ever had one of these encounters while under the influence of drugs or alcohol. I still have plenty of more stories, so I'll end this email here. As before, I'll probably send more soon.
Okay, so I do appreciate the inclusion regarding mental illness and hallucinations, because that is always where my brain's going to go first and foremost, is are you of sound mind and body to make
this call
such outlandish claims? And I say outlandish not in a derogatory way, but this is so far out from anything that I've personally experienced with the paranormal. I mean, I said it before, what happened in Phantom Farm in 15 years is the most insane thing that's happened to me with the paranormal side.
Mm-hmm.
And so to hear a story like this that plays out in my brain like a movie, I have to dissect it in
a very practical way.
Yeah. So there's a lot to take from this, because you it said it wasn't malevolent, but then multiple showed up. Well, it begs to ask, how did you ask the question? Because for me, one of the first questions we usually ask is, who are we speaking with, if anyone?
How many are here?
Are there multiple people here? Okay, are there multiple things here? You kind of have to break it down step by step by step to get to square one. Square one being, who am I communicating with? Do I have a name? If so, what is it? What is their goal? Is their goal interaction and conversation? Are they just stuck? Are we dealing with something malevolent? Are we dealing with something that's just here? It's an imprint of a memory. What are we dealing with? This sounds, again, and I always go back to this because it seems to be more and more commonplace than I ever once knew, this trickster element.
Mm-hmm.
Because your mother told you that you were sensitive. Well, let's just play devil's advocate and say that this creature is able to access memories and thoughts. So you're going in with the expectation of, I'm sensitive to the paranormal. This thing knows that. So it's going to kind of challenge you, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to, oh, well, fine, as you turn the lights back on. It's going to kind of play with your emotions, play with your thought process, and try and break you down to your core as well as it seemingly has, as you did it to it, to get it to converse with you and top on the wall.
Yeah. No, I can agree with that.
But at the same time, I have heard stories. You said block out the light. What I was kind of anticipating is the light switch being gone. Because as crazy as that sounds, I'm reading more and more encounters of, I sat and watched the light switch melt off of the fucking wall. Or I know that the thermometer or the AC and the heat unit is right here. I know this is where it's at, but it's just not there anymore. Then you turn around and look back and it's back on the wall. These like shifts in reality do seem to be happening. And the question is, as I always, you know, have to phrase it, is it happening more often, or are we now more accepted as a community and as a people to talk about these things? Has it always been happening equally as often, if not more so, and we just never said anything because you didn't want to be fucking crazy?
Well, it's not even that you'd be fucking crazy. It's that a lot of times we say, oh, I'd lose my head if it wasn't attached. You know, we have all these forgetfulness. And humans in general are pretty faulty when it comes to remembering things. You only have so much storage capacity in your brain. But to me, this sounds more like a case of temporary insanity. And I don't mean it in like a way of, oh, you went crazy and then you experienced these things.
Did you just hear something? Yeah. Was that you?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Continue. I thought that a ghost was like trying to pull up a fucking chair. No. Like, let me tell you guys why you're wrong.
No, it was this is the back of my chair.
Okay, okay.
I don't know if they heard that or not. Did you hear it?
Yes, I heard it through my headphones, and I thought someone was like breathing in my ear, and I was about to say, oh, you grudge bitch. I've been waiting to fucking stunner your ass since I was 13 fucking years old. I'm about to swanton bomb you from the top of the stairs.
Okay, okay. Anyway, temporary insanity. I don't mean that in the way of that you went insane, so then you experienced these things. that these things caused you to go into that mental state and manipulated your reality. And so, so to me, these entities, these experiences can cause these hallucinogenic type reactions to your environment. It's like you're on mushrooms. It's like you're on a trip.
Well, and everything our brains have a certain level of dimethyltryptamine, DMT, in them at all times.
And don't they also have a certain amount of psilocybin in them too?
Sort of, kind of. But to me, what if a paranormal event is bringing that DMT level, that there's natural level in your brain?
There's a sensor, yeah, that could be tripping that. But
interesting. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that would explain a lot of these, like, I heard footsteps and then the craziest thing ever happened. Did the footsteps cause your brain to allow you to see or allow you to experience what's been happening around you constantly? Thought experiments, fucking, I love them. I love this shit.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's my opinion on that. It sounds more like typical demon behavior, honestly. I know it said it wasn't a demon, but this does sound like, you know, movie demon 101.
Yes.
But that's also why I think it's important to go down the hallucinogenic, like, self preservation brain conversation in this as well.
Well, I've been, again, one thing I've been looking into is you kind of made, you did sort of allude to maybe you have done certain narcotics throughout your life.
Yeah.
At this point you hadn't. If you've done psilocybin once before, I have been hearing constantly, I mean, a new story a week, how someone broke through that barrier 7 months, a year off of mushrooms and had a psilocybin-like experience because of something terrible, like something big happened. They got a promotion. They were so happy, they started to fucking trip out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Or someone passed away. They were so sad, they tapped into that psilocybin-like experience in your brain.
Jesus.
That's fucking terrifying is what that is.
But also, the last thing I want to say about that story before we go on to the next one is there is a lot of power in saying goodbye. There is a lot of power in cutting ties and saying, and establishing domain in yourself, saying you Absolutely. Are not allowed to follow me. So whether you believe in spirituality or what rituals or what have you is irrelevant. There's power in those two things. And I agree that you should have reestablished that dominance over yourself.
Yeah, I do agree with the power of disconnection. I think that's something that's often avoided because people don't want to kind of...
They're afraid of losing the experience, especially in paranormal investigations. They're afraid of, and how even Austin's done this.
Yeah.
Austin has been afraid of losing the spark, basically. Like if we're investigating and some crazy shit's happening, he's afraid that if we cleanse or we say goodbye or we do whatever, it's all going to go away. Well, it doesn't just go away. It just doesn't go with us.
Yeah. We don't carry it in our backpacks home.
Exactly.
All right, so the next story here is from Vincent Sheed. That sounds like a fucking boss, like an end boss, in-game boss.
Yeah.
You know, fight fucking Vincent. Okay. Subject here is had to tell my grandfather to knock his spooky shit off. First off, love the podcast. Binged it the moment I found it, and I appreciate how you talk to your audience no matter the topic. Okay, so I want to discuss this for a second.
Okay.
We wouldn't have a podcast without an audience.
True.
I am really, I'm going to sit on my high horse here and say.
All right, let me get your podium.
Thank you. these podcasts who act like their listeners and their audience don't
exist
or create the reason that they exist on the level they do, they need to knock that shit off. Because we've dealt with some of these podcasts in the past. I've discussed this at length with other podcasters. If you don't acknowledge the importance of your audience, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, especially in this field is you have to cultivate a environment of knowledge sharing. And that's exactly what I feel like we've successfully accomplished with you guys. But just in general with this paranormal community is we have to, the more information that we share, the more information we gather as a community as a whole, the further we take the football down the football field.
Well, it's like I said time and time again, there are no experts in this field. And I think the second you stop becoming a student and you attempt to become a teacher, you've lost that connection with reality and with the reality of whatever reality you're trying to create for yourself, whether it be you're going down the path of esotericism, you're learning about fairies, you're learning about golems and goblins, you're learning about ufology. The second you stop learning, you start dying in that field. And we see that way too often with people who don't acknowledge the importance. Because there's been so many things you guys have taught us over the years where, I mean, how investigative practices, I've been doing this for 13, 15 years, and you guys say, well, hey, I actually approach it this way. Okay, I fucking love that way. I'm going to try that
next
time.
Tell me more.
Yeah, and you have to kind of have that conversation, because if not, it's just Brittany and I talking to one another, which we do anyway.
Yep.
Okay, so anyway, note this talks of cancer, death, and a mention of suicidal thoughts from someone I speak of. Thank you for the warning. I thought I should warn you in case you don't want to read it all. I'd be okay with that. I'm finally comfortable to talk about this outside of a close friend and the most connected family to the situation, especially as both grandparents have now passed on. I knew when my papa, that's what I call my grandmother's third husband, people kept thinking I meant my dad, passed away, like the moment it did. I was supposed to see him that morning, but called and said I couldn't because I was sick, and I didn't want to risk him getting something while he was on his oxygen tank and already frail. So I said I'd see him in a couple of days. That night, I did my own little prayer at my altar and got a scent of their home while doing so. Tobacco, the wood stove, and whatever grandma would have been baking years ago. I got the phone call from my mom the next morning that he had passed around the same time that previous night. I still don't forgive myself for not seeing him. I want to explain something here. I understand this very well. Mm-hmm. I unfortunately, when my dad passed away, I was there in the last moments. And for 10 years, I struggled to forgive myself and accept that you cannot be in control of everything. And that was the most important lesson that I learned, because I got the call from my mom. I rushed home. I did CPR on my father. But it was one of those situations where I didn't forgive myself for years for not being home. I was busy at a friend's house just enjoying summer vacation. And I never forgave myself until recently, where I accepted that you cannot change and control everything.
Yep.
So I don't want you to beat yourself up for that. I understand exactly how you feel and why you feel that way, more than most probably would. But you have to understand that the expectation is never that you could be there to control or to change it. And yeah, you probably would have loved having that last conversation with him, but that doesn't take away from every other good conversation you've had with him
up until that point.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with
that. So I know we kind of went on a different direction, but I wanted to let you know, I know how you feel. I know why you feel that way, and it is a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Afterwards, I moved in with my grandma to help take care of the house and keep her company while she coped with losing her husband. And while she recovered from her own cancer, they both caught throat cancer at the same time. And it was clear his spirit was sticking around. You'd smell his cologne that he hadn't worn in years around the place. Hear his boots. Sometimes his hats would move, but that, I assume, was just my gran. Sometimes at night, it felt like someone had pushed me in the hallway. Not a bad push, but like how family would push the kid in a nice way. I don't know how to describe it. We were a rough family. Shoving each other and ruffling the hair kind of thing. I would see someone in the hallway at night, but not gran. While I would see him most of the time, if I was out at 3 a.m., which I tried not to do because I'm paranoid I saw something else, but this ain't that. One time I was cooking up a steak, and I had it on low heat, and I turned around and said a glass of water. Then suddenly the dials were turned up to high, and the flame of the range made the fire alarm go off. It takes effort to turn those dials, because the range was old. They never turn on their own. Not in the nearly 20 years I have been using them, at least. I should specify the steak thing. Papa liked his food charred, practically charcoal. That is an old person thing I've never understood.
Mammal's the same way. She likes her steak well done.
They either want it like basically still moving, or they want it fucking...
No, in between.
Yeah. There's no medium rare for an older person. It's either burn it or I want to know its name. I want it to be able to tell me its name before I eat it. and he was always a pain when I was cooking, trying to control the heat or tell me what to do when I know what to do. Because he taught me how to cook, I was so mad that night. I was like, Papa, I don't need your help. This came out of me like instinct, just like when he always fussed at my cooking, just shouting at the air at the middle of the night. The worst of it was that Grandma was having nightmares, horrible nightmares. Nightmares about Grandpa trying to get her to leave here and go with him.
Whoa.
Nightmares about the funeral, about everything that was awful when he wasn't there. She would wail that she didn't want to live. And after one particular bad spell in which she decided to go out to a cabin they owned by the river before it turned winter, just to clear her head, she took a friend with her, only because that friend went with her that I felt comfortable to stay behind. I have heard stories of this, of it being, now, if we want to discuss the psychological term for it, I believe it's survivor's guilt. And you see this both in soldiers, but you also see this in
elderly
people who have been in
or widows or widowers. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've heard of this before, but this seems stronger than that. Like typically survivor's guilt will present itself in a mindset and just general thoughts and feelings. This seems like it's a little further. A full-blown
episode of depression. Yeah.
Once she was gone, I got to work. I'm good at cleaning when I want, and I'm extra good at kicking negative shit out of my space, physical or not. It was a beautiful sunny day, so I opened up all the windows, let a lot of fresh air and sunshine in, opened the back door and all that. And then I started to smoke and cleanse the house, the whole house. Did it how Grandma taught me since I was old enough to hold a fire. It's a tradition in our culture. We are both Lakota. Got all the corners, went double in her room, made sure to get into the wood stove. Deep cleansed the house myself, and myself too all is at it. Did my usual, you need to leave, you can't be harming her like this. All intent was while I loved my papa. He couldn't stay. Didn't feel right kicking him out of the house he built, but it was hurting my grandma. It was hurting her, and I know grief is awful, and she couldn't heal like that. I love your mindset on this. It came from a place of love.
It wasn't forceful. It wasn't, I don't care about how, I care about how they're both feeling. And I understand both sides, but this is what's best.
Yeah, this isn't okay.
That's actually like a monumental decision you actually had to make. Yeah. Because I'm sure for you, that also brought you comfort. Seeing all these familiar things, these synchronicities with your papa.
Having the smells, having things that reminded you of him consistently. And comforted present. You. Yeah.
But knowing that you had to make that decision for your grandmother is huge.
Yeah.
I really do give you a lot of props for that.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I want to say I'm proud of you for making that decision because that couldn't have been an easy one to make.
Yeah.
The house felt better. Maybe because I really cleaned it. Who knows? But I closed everything up again and smudged my herb and the oil mixture at entrances for bad spirits to stay out. Not saying Papa was bad, but this was just in case. Honestly, it was to keep her shitty fake friends away. But in the end, the house felt like a home again. Grandma came back a few days later, and I didn't say anything about what I did. Not that she wouldn't believe me. She's the one that taught me, but I wanted to just wait and see. She felt better. I truly think the fresh air did her good. She went to sleep, and the next morning over coffee, she told me about her dreams. That she and Papa were laughing and jumping on the bed like kids, and he told her to come with her. And she cried in her dream and said she couldn't. That he was dead, and she needed to stay there just a bit longer. But that he needed to go, because he couldn't stay there. And Papa just said, all right, and then she woke up. She didn't have another nightmare about him after that I was aware of. She eventually passed away from her own cancer coming back in 2020, right before the pandemic got bad. And I like to think that she and Papa are running around acting silly together once more. Note, this is just me. This is just the most recent. It's cooled off ever since I moved out of the Southeast Kansas area and got away from the woods. I've got so many other spooked up shit that happened to me in 30 years, from more goddamn ghosts to like 3 UFO moments. So if you ever want that, let me know. I got winter. Oh, that's a thing outside stories as well. But this is the one that stuck to me as personal since I knew who it was and they knew me. Not to say that the things don't know me, but even if I don't know them. I want you to, if you're willing to send in more stories, I love that. But I would also love to know how are you feeling and are you having any of these happenings, for lack of a better term, since you've moved out of the area? Are you having any strange dreams? Did you have any dreams about your grandfather or grandmother after she passed? Because I would love to know, is this a family ordeal? Because it's kind of tough to ask that question, but I'm always interested when things like this happen, is there a record of it happening previously within the family?
Yeah.
Or is this the start? Because that's the thing, is the origin story is often the most interesting to me, but I also love to know, is your family, or you said you were part of the, you know, Lakota, is that something that's common with your people? I would love to know, because I, unfortunately, there's not a lot of good resources out there to do that style of research.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so on to the next one. This is anonymous, and the subject is scary phone calls. Hey guys, On the road, trucker here. You guys get me through my nights. Until a few years ago, I still had a flip phone. One day, I got a random call asking for some girl named Sarah. I told them that they had the wrong number, and they hung up. For the next few months, I would get these calls asking for Sarah about once or twice a week, coming from different numbers and different sounding people. Sometimes these calls came in at 3 a.m. One day I got a call, and like usual, I said, I don't know Sarah. After they hung up, I went to my contacts and hit redial. The answering machine said the number did not exist. I went back through my call history trying to call some other people that would have called me with the same results. It was the machine telling me that the numbers do not exist. Every time I would get one of these calls, I would redial the number and still got the machine. I Googled the numbers, but all I learned was that they were coming from North Dakota, Montana, basically everywhere in the Midwest. The next time I got a call asking for Sarah, I said, oh yeah, she's right here. And the other person on the other end said, no, she isn't, and hung up.
Whoa.
So at first I was thinking maybe like it was a credit debt collector.
Yeah,
a
robocall situation, yeah.
But them saying, no, no, she isn't? What the fuck?
Send me the number.
Send me the number. Things started getting weird when I started getting calls from unknown numbers calling me. Whoever and whatever on the other end hung up the second I said hello. Once I got a call from where they didn't hang up after I said hello, and I could hear someone on the other end just listening, but they didn't say anything. Just something really uneasy about it. That sounds like some of the numbers we've called in the past.
Yeah.
Oof, you might want to change your number.
Yeah, so he ends up with, what do you think this could be? And so, like Brittany said initially, I'm like, oh, it's a debt collector.
Yeah.
Because they'll change their numbers, they can randomize it, how they can mask and house their numbers to come up with as different people. I mean, hell, I've had debt collectors call, well, spam collectors call, and it'll say from Dayton, Ohio, and then once the call is over and I go back and check my, like, recent calls, it's from fucking, like, Venezuela.
Yeah.
And shit like that. So there's a bunch of ways they can do that to mask their phone numbers, but it's the no, she isn't thing that got me.
That's what got me.
Yeah, because we've dealt with some strange phone numbers over the years, and anytime that one of them is definitive about, no, she's not, you're like, oh shit. How are you certain?
Yeah.
You know, and it could just be someone fucking with you. Like, we can play devil's advocate. Someone could just be fucking with you.
That's a lot of effort to fuck with you, though.
It's a consistently long, like,
who did you piss off? That's the real question.
Yeah, that's interesting, though. I love those creepy, like, short little stories like that. But at the same time, it's like,
give me more.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to do two more. I'm going to do one. I'll have Brittany do one more. And then if you didn't hear your story told, it will be in the next listener stories. Unfortunately, we get so many of these, it's very hard to compile them into one episode and also have the time to discuss them all.
Yeah.
So this one comes from Ryan Hughes, Spoopy House in Maryland. I love that he said spoopy. So I grew up in Southern Maryland before moving to Ashland, Kentucky, right on the border of the Ohio and West Virginia. We've been to Ashland. We actually just went to Ashland a few months ago?
We've been a couple times this year because we took Austin, and then me and you just drove through Ashland again when we went to look at the
rental we were looking at.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Ashland has a weird feeling to it. Like, take hell you're out of the equation.
Ashland's fucking weird.
Ashland has a very bizarre fucking feel. Like it's in a bubble.
Mm-hmm. And it's a bubble of distress.
Yeah.
Like, the feeling I get there is just straight up depression.
I've never once felt easy in the town of Ashland.
No.
And that's saying something. I was 12 and we just started packing, everything in preparation for the big move. Well, I was in my room with my door locked while I was playing Call of Duty World at War Nazi Zombies. This guy, Ryan, hit me up.
We'll play some zombies.
I've been known to play some Nazi zombies in my day. I fucking love me some Nazi zombies.
Oh, Jesus.
Actually, real fast, I have to tell this fucking story. So when World at War first came out, I've been a junior in high school, sophomore, I don't remember. I was in high school, and we were talking about Nazi zombies so much that my teacher slammed his book on his desk, and he's like, the next fucking person who says Nazi zombies is kicked out of the fucking class. And I, without a fucking beat, this chick walks in and says, what's Nazi zombies? I fucking lost it.
Oh my God.
Okay, anyway, when all of a sudden I heard the doorknob jiggling as if someone was trying to get in. I paused the game and opened my door, and nobody was there. I went downstairs and asked my younger sisters and my mom if they were trying to get my room. Puzzled, they all told me they had been downstairs eating and making dinner. I just shrugged it off and went back to murdering the undead Nazis. Good man, you're a patriot. Later that night, I went to sleep and was woken up all of a sudden when my head, I'm sorry. I went to sleep and was woken up when all of a sudden the head of my bed felt like it lifted off the ground and was dropped. I freaked out and threw the blanket over my head as if that would protect me because out of sight, out of mind, right? There's a certain protection that as a child you have.
When a blanket is pulled over your head like that.
I finally got the courage to turn on my bedroom light and grab my cell phone. It was 3 a.m. on the dot. That was about the only weird thing that happened to me at that house. Hope you guys enjoyed my short story, and hail to the haystack. You know what, Ryan? I don't really need you to, you know, the fanfare was great at Nazi zombies. You know, you already made the sale. You shruck oil, quit digging.
Oh, man.
No, that is interesting. I do like I love stories like this because they're so fucking believable. Like, there wasn't a single bit of that that's like, oh, I'm sure you were playing Nazi zombies. Like,
of course you were playing Nazi zombies.
I am sure you were playing Nazi zombies, actually, because you're a patriot. And you know what you're doing. No, that's interesting. The head of his bed being lifted is so weird to me because
that takes a lot of weight.
It takes a lot of strength, and it takes a very strong person to do that, let alone a spirit that we're led to believe are weak little, you know, they're just barely hanging on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about that one. That one's interesting, though.
Very interesting.
Thank you for that submission, Ryan.
Side note, speaking of like the certain protection of like putting your blanket over your head, I was reading something. I need to try to find it again about the protection of giving old clothes, like hand-me-downs, to your children.
Yeah.
It's apparently like this old Scottish tradition that was actually a protection ritual or something like that of giving it protected you from fae if you gave old clothing.
So we weren't just poor growing up and I was wearing my sister's clothes for a reason.
That's what they wanted you to believe.
Oh, interesting.
Now, I'll have to look into it more before we talk about it. But yeah, so if anyone's heard about that, let me know.
So I might have just been poor.
I mean,
that's what you're saying. Okay, same.
All right. So the last one we're going to cover today is Left Anonymous. And the subject is, I saw the Hat Man when I was 17.
Okay. You guys need Jesus. I don't say that lightly, but the amount of fucking Hat Man stories submitted... I am worried for all of you. I am genuinely concerned that something bad's going to happen.
What was Eric telling us about the Hat Man? He was telling us something over the weekend.
Everyone has a Hat Man story, and it's so scary because it's like one of those things that no one talked about until it was talked about.
Yeah, I'm going to have to text Eric and see what he was saying because he told me something about the Hat Man. I was like, what the fuck, Eric?
Yeah.
Okay, so big fan of the show, guys. Phantom Farm was really incredible.
I know. No, I'm kidding. Thank you. I was in it, so okay, of course
big
it
head.
Was.
Okay, big head. I've never told this story to anyone in person. I always felt people would call me crazy. I was around 17 when I first encountered the Hat Man. One day I was upstairs getting ready to leave with my family, who had already been downstairs waiting. I take forever. There was a loud thud downstairs indicating that they had already gone out to the car.
This is how Home Alone started, just so you know.
Yeah. I was just finishing up when I heard them again. Suddenly, they were screaming for me to come downstairs. So I yelled, I'm coming, and rushed all the way to the kitchen where I heard a voice echo from. But once I stood in front of the hallway frame leading into the kitchen, there it was, a tall, dark figure with a hat.
You gotta fight him.
Instantly, I tried to figure out if it was harmful or not. One thing I did know is that it had no eyes, no face, no mouth, no indication of life, so it wasn't breathing. Or that was me adding something in there, so it wasn't breathing. But I knew it was living. Want to know how? I said hello, and it waved. It seemed pretty crazy, but in reality, I was very terrified, and what the Hat Man did was take his hat off. Take off his hat. Yep, he took it off and put it back on.
You got m'ladied by the Hat Man. You got fucking m'ladied by the Hat Man. This is incredible.
Oh my God.
M'lady?
M'lady. Suddenly I had to blink and he was gone.
I'm sorry.
You he m'ladied and then he dipped.
That is the most fucking baller Hat Man story of all time. Like, oh, Hat Man's fucking after you guys? Yeah, he hit me with a m'lady and then fucking left.
The next thing I did was run outside to see if I was just going crazy. I did hear my family leave, and I was right. All my family had been waiting in the car the entire time I had heard them. It wasn't them. I'm not sure what I heard, but I did answer, and it did sound very familiar, like it knew me already. One thing I'll never forget is how in our family kitchen, there's a huge sliding door that leads into the backyard. On this particular day, the blinds had been pushed all the way to one side, exposing the sunlight. So what I'm trying to say is I know for a fact when I saw the Hat Man, it was pure daylight.
Okay, so to get a good Hat Man encounter, it has to be daytime.
Eventually, I realized I encountered something I couldn't quite tell anyone without sounding crazy. I went into the car where the family had been waiting. My mom was just about to complain when I said, "Were you guys back in the house screaming for me?" She gave me a strange look and said, "We've been waiting for you this whole time in the car." Till this day, I wonder what would happen if I saw one again. I think about how I have a long history of sleeping disorders, but I know what I saw was real, was in real life. I was awake this time. I'm not the best at punctuation, but I just thought maybe someone else could tell me I'm not the only one who has seen him, and maybe the Hat Man has moved for them as well.
I hate to tell you. I don't
There's
know.
There's so many different types of Hat Man stories.
Though. I've never heard of the Hat Man hitting you with a m'lady. Okay. Did you have a sudden urge?
To want to buy a fedora?
No. To upvote him on Reddit or give him some sort of comment karma?
Apparently so.
Because if you did, I think that it was actually just a Redditor that broke into your home.
Oh my God.
Because they've also been described as being completely devolved of human features and having a fedora.
Jesus Christ.
No, well, thank you guys for listening. I love these listener stories. It gives us a chance to kind of just like unwind for a minute and really dig into the vault that we've learned over the years. Because that's something we often forget about is how much we've learned and how much crazy shit we've done in the past couple of years.
I agree.
So with that being said, if you guys want to submit your stories, talesfromthedark.net, go to submit your stories. I know there's some we missed. They will be in the next episode. I don't know when we're going to do another listener stories. I have to get into a better habit of not letting them back up this much because we still have stories that we haven't gotten to. So with that being said, tomorrow we have a very cool episode. We're starting our next ARG type story. I saw some guesses. None of you guys have been right about this ARG.
Have they not?
Makes me even more fucking excited.
All right.
So with that being said, unless there's anything else that you'd like to add, Miss Brittany.
I do not.
I think we're going to have to add this episode of Listener Stories number 11 to our never ending, but our always growing
Tales from the Dark.